This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hi, Yasmin here. I just want to acknowledge that today's show is part of a fast-moving news story. So for the very latest, head over to slate.com. Okay, here's the show. The death toll and the level of suffering in Israel and in Gaza has worsened since the attack by Hamas on October 7th. Now Israel has declared war and ordered more than 1 million Palestinians to relocate.
I've been, following the conflict, and I've lived in Israel, and I've been following it for now, three decades. And honestly, I don't think I can recall as difficult a week as this past week.
Dov Waxman is a professor of political science at UCLA, and he leads the Nazarian Center for Israel Studies at the university. He's still processing the initial surprise attack by Hamas, the killings, the taking of hostages. Then, the retaliatory airstrikes by Israel and the forced evacuation of Palestinians in Gaza.
It's a very emotionally conflicting time because on the one hand, you want to kind of mourn and grieve the loss of life and the terror that Israelis have suffered. And at the same time, also remain empathetic and compassionate about the plight of Gazans now suffering under Israel's airstrikes and now also being forced to leave their homes.
Last week, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu formed an emergency unity government, bringing in a more centrist political rival. The move was meant to increase trust in Israel's leaders, something Dov says Netanyahu has lost.
I think many, many Israelis felt completely abandoned by their government. First of all, many felt abandoned by the IDF on the day of the attack and the following day, given how long it took the IDF to actually send troops over toward the communities in the Gaza Strip to try to protect them. So I think there was a sense of abandonment in the hours of the attack itself. But beyond that, the sense that this government was completely absent. I mean, many people, were hearing or seeing on social media that their friends or their relatives or their parents or grandparents had been abducted. They weren't hearing this from the Israeli government. And I also think there is a deep sense of anger over the failings which allowed this attack to happen.
But sometimes when issues of national security come up and national tragedy, you'll see citizens rally behind their leader. Has that happened?
No, it actually hasn't. You're right that typically you do see that kind of, what we political science call that rally around the flag effect. There is a rally around the flag in the sense that there is a huge sense of unity among Israelis and a strong coming together and a revulsion against Hamas and a desire to take action. But it's not translating into support for Prime Minister Netanyahu. I don't think he can recover that political support.
Today on the show, Israel's new government for its new war. I'm Yasmin Khan, in for Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I want to spend some time parsing this out, the unity government. Tell me about it. Who has Netanyahu teamed up with, and how did it come together so quickly?
Well, it's really an emergency government insofar as it's only intended for the duration of the war itself. And in order to do that, they just brought in only one of the opposition parties, National Unity Party, led by Benny Gantz. So the other leading opposition party has refused to join. So it's not really a broad-based government in that sense. It doesn't, certainly doesn't include any Arab parties, doesn't include parties on the left of the Israeli political spectrum or the center-left. Benny Gantz's National Unity Party is actually a right-wing party, or at least center-right. But Gantz is considered a kind of safe pair of hands, a relatively moderate. And he also has his deputy, another former IDF chief of staff, who's also joining this small wartime cabinet. So what you have essentially is a very small a wartime cabinet, a three-person cabinet, just made up of Prime Minister Netanyahu, his defense minister, and now Benny Gantz. But the emergency government has one task and one task only, which is to conduct the war and to make decisions during war. The agreement was it won't deal with anything else. It will not introduce any other legislation. And so really everything else is on hold while the war is being conducted. And I expect that when the war ends, the government will, this emergency government will not continue beyond that.
Can you give us some more background on Benny Gantz? I know he has a lot of military experience.
He has a lot of military. He's got a very distinguished military career and was considered not, you know, especially hardline in that respect. And is a much briefer political career. I think it's worth pointing out that Gantz's political views and approach to the Palestinians isn't vastly different from Netanyahu's. They're deeply distrustful of the Palestinians. They oppose the idea of a Palestinian state being established in the near term. They're not keen to enter negotiations with the Palestinians. They believe that there is military options against Hamas. You know, then so they share more ideologically than they disagree about.
I did want to linger on Netanyahu. You know, prior to the Hamas attack, he was seen by Israelis as Mr. Security, right? How did he build that image for himself? And how did people believe him?
Well, so I would say, first of all, he was seen by some Israelis. Israelis are, you know, have been for quite some time divided about Netanyahu. He has strong support among his base, among the Likud base, much like, say, you know, former President Trump does among Republicans. But there are many, and I would say the majority of Israelis, who really dislike him strongly and blame him for all sorts of things. Because after all, he has been Israel's longest serving leader. He's been in power most of the time since 2009. He was also in office in the 1990s.
Right. I guess I should have said he fancied himself as Mr. Security.
And indeed, that was historically a big part of his appeal. And part of that was because although he's a hawk, he's not been a military adventurous. So, you know, in those previous rounds of warfare between Israel and Hamas, for example, when he was prime minister, he was very reluctant to order a ground invasion of the Gaza Strip or to send Israeli troops into the Gaza Strip. And so, yes, he gave Israelis the impression that he was very responsible and was the most effective manager of their security. And it's ironic, actually, that, you know, he cultivated this image of being Mr. Security when his actual policies on the ground, I would argue, actually contributed to Israel's insecurity, in particular because he pursued for much of the last decade or more a policy which has actually allowed Hamas to consolidate its control over the Gaza Strip. He actually, you know, kind of saw Hamas as in a Hamas rule in Gaza is in some ways a positive thing for Israel, strange as that may seem, because it undermined any sort of legitimacy for the Palestinian Authority. It made it very obvious to Israelis why there shouldn't be a Palestinian state, because, you know, they might get Hamas ruling that state. And so Hamas served Netanyahu's interests and his worldview in a certain way. And in that respect, you know, that contributed not only to what happened last weekend, but also to all of the previous wars that had taken place, because rather than build up and support or negotiate with the more moderate Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, Netanyahu preferred to weaken the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank and allow Hamas to consolidate its rule in Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, people were raising concerns that Netanyahu had sidelined security and the protection of the Jewish state in favor of his political agenda in general. Who were the people that were raising red flags, in addition to his policy with Hamas and in Gaza?
Well, actually, I mean, many members. One of the interesting things inside Israel is that despite his reputation for Mr. Security, he's long had a tense and difficult relationship with Israel's military and intelligence establishment. And also in terms of his policies towards the West Bank, and particularly acceleration of settlement building deep inside the West Bank, these actions that many Israeli security officials believed were dangerous, risky, and undermined Israeli security. So there's actually been, it's not just, you know, Israelis on the left or on the far left who criticize Netanyahu, but many, you know, very sober-minded Israeli generals have come out in recent years with really harsh criticisms of Netanyahu.
Yeah, I saw a recent poll that showed that 4 out of 5 Israelis or Jewish Israelis blame Netanyahu and the government for the Hamas attack.
That's right. And I think, you know, and that it's remarkable that that's already the sentiment. And I think once the picture becomes clearer of what was known and what before, because now there are reports, and I think reliable reports, that Netanyahu personally received some advance warning that Hamas might be planning something major. They didn't know the details, but that once this information gets out and there's going to be a commission of inquiry, then I think it's going to be even more damning for Netanyahu.
So in terms of this getting us to where we are at with this unity government, Netanyahu was left with no choice really but to form it, and that he perhaps needs Gantz in order to lead the country right now.
That's right. He does. I think he needs to have, I think Israel needs an emergency government right now, because this is, you know, a moment in Israel's history, unlike any of it, anything in the past. And so I think overwhelmingly there was and is a strong desire among the public to have a unity government, an emergency government. Because Netanyahu and his ministers just had there's no confidence in that government. So he does need them. You know, he's going to be trying to project himself as the person in charge. He's going to see himself as this is his kind of Churchillian moment, if you like, you know, that he's going to be this great wartime leader. But I think Israelis will see through that.
After the break, the unity government's in place. Their military strategy is becoming clearer. Will Palestinian civilians face the brunt of it?
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com. from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
So Netanyahu has now formally declared that Israel is at war. And as we said, Israel has ordered more than a million Palestinians to leave the north of Gaza and go south. The nation has also halted access, Gaza's access to electricity, to fuel, to food and water, I believe. And Netanyahu has said every Hamas member is a dead man. What do we know about the military approach so far?
So Israel has mobilized, I think last I heard, about 360,000 people reservists. So that is a massive, massive mobilization of Israeli soldiers, unlike anything we've seen in the past in terms of the size of that. And what that means is that's you know, those reserve soldiers who have been massing on Israel's southern border with Gaza, you know, these are civilians who have other jobs and lives and families, and they're leaving them. And so they can't sustain that mobilization for any length of time, because it just means the whole country is shut down. The goal of this military operation seems to be different than the goal of previous operations. In the past, Israel contented itself with delivering what it called with these kind of punishing blows against Hamas, trying to deplete its weapons stockpiles and kill its leadership and military leaders specifically, not necessarily its political leaders. This time, however, Israel's going beyond that. It's not just trying to punish and deter Hamas, but it seems that Israel is intent upon completely removing Hamas from power. I think there's a real danger here that Israel will repeat mistakes that it's previously made in its history in the invasion of Lebanon in 1982, and mistakes that the United States made after the September 11th terrorist attack in trying to carry out regime change, and realize, and then once you go in and you can depose a regime, you can topple the regime, but then what?
Gaza is one of the most densely populated places on Earth. And there, you know, has been reporting that spaces that are relatively safe, like hospitals and schools, have been targeted by airstrikes. Israel's defense minister even claimed that the nation is fighting human animals. What impact will this war strategy likely have on the people of Gaza?
Well, it seems that the way Israel is conducting its war is really with little regard, tragically, for the civilians of Gaza. There's so much public outrage and anger and grief and sorrow among Israelis right now that there's a huge burning desire, I think, among many Israelis for retribution, to just, you know, hit back as hard as possible. I think Israelis also experience a sense of humiliation. And that means that's what is, I think, shaping the conduct of this military campaign in a way that nobody really cares less about Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip, because tragically for them, Hamas is of course embedded in among civilians. Hamas keeps rockets and weapons under hospitals, under schools. And it does pose, therefore, a huge dilemma for the Israeli military in going after Hamas, is because it is Hamas is based and housed in such a densely populated and largely urban territory. So I think Israel has a moral responsibility as well as a legal one to minimize as much as possible. And it's very difficult, and I don't want to make light of the difficulties. But at least in the past, in Israeli military operations, there was at least some attempt. They provided these kind of what they called knocks on roofs, where they would drop a little bomblet, which was like non-lethal, on a building before they carried out an airstrike against that building. This time around, they don't seem to be doing that. And the instruction to tell, over a million Palestinians to just leave, where are they going to go? It seems that there is a complete disregard for the needs and the welfare of innocent civilians in Gaza.
My last question about Netanyahu's leadership. For now, Netanyahu remains in power, albeit alongside one of his political rivals. But I'm wondering if you think that his political career will survive this.
I think he will always be remembered for what took place on 7th of October. That was Israel, the darkest day in Israel's history, and he will always be remembered for that. But in Israel's political system, the government only falls not when it's lost the support of the Israeli public, but when it's lost the support of a majority in the parliament. And so he'll cling on, and his coalition will try to remain together for as long as possible to avoid elections, because when those elections happen, I think they will be turfed out of office. Israelis will remember these events. They are seared into Israel's memory. And I think Netanyahu and the Likud will be held responsible. I don't necessarily think that will lead to any sort of shift to the left or any major political realignment in Israel, but I think it will at least lead to a different government in Israel.
Dov, thank you so much for your time. I'm really grateful for this conversation.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Dov Waxman is the director of the Nazarian Center for Israel Studies at UCLA. His most recent book is called The Israeli-Palestinian Conflict: What Everyone Needs to Know. That's the show. If you're a fan of What Next, the best way to support our work is to join Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, Paige Osborne, and Madeline Ducharme. We're led by Alicia Montgomery, with a little help from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations at Slate. And I'm Yasmin Khan, in for Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.